Welcome to the Shipping Podcast, a multi-fandom podcast for the shipper in you. Hosted by Shirazade, your friendly mod, OTP shipper, and fandom old.
After the planned 13th episode had to be cancelled, I'm very grateful to LJ for jumping in and talking with me about Korra and the Sami from The Legend of Korra. They're another canon ship, and femme slash at that, which even today is still quite rare.
But what's a ship, you might ask? It's an abbreviation for relationship and can be used as a noun or verb. I ship Kirk slash Spock, or my favorite ship is Spirk, meaning you would like to see Star Trek's Kirk and Spock as a couple. And in the latter case, you're using one of the popular ship names, smushing their names together in a way that can be cutesy or cringy, depending on your point of view. However, this podcast will be zero judgment, 100% squee, as fans talk about their ships, why they ship them, and which fanworks might make you ship them too. At the end, each guest will nominate the next fan to talk about their OTP, that's one true pairing, i.e. the ship they love the most, creating a multi-ship, multi-fandom chain of interviews. Het, i.e. straight couples, slash, meaning same-sex pairings, fictional characters, or even real people. The only limit is the imagination. Does that sound like something you might enjoy? Please give it a listen and let me know what you think. The Shipping Cast is hosted on shippingcast.fandomish.net. That's fandomish.net, where you can find show notes and subscribe on various podcasting platforms. There's also a Tumblr at shippingcast, a Twitter at shipping_cast, or you can email me on theshippingcast@fandomish.net, where you could also send me a recorded voice message for inclusion in a future show. I'm very open to questions and opinions about the ships we talk about or shipping in general, so please get in touch. I very much enjoy making this podcast, but I've had to start paying for pro accounts, so I set up a Patreon on patreon.com/shippingcast, in addition to the Ko-fi and PayPal links, which you can find on shippingcast.fandomish.net/support. Would you like me to record some episodes that cover more general aspects of fandom instead of being limited to ships? One of the Patreon perks is special episodes, and you can even vote on the topics. A note in advance. As mentioned before, this podcast is a judgment-free zone. My guests are here to share what they love, not to defend themselves. We ship and let ship here, and any flames, i.e. hateful messages, will be used to roast marshmallows, to use old-school fandom lingo. This expression dates me, I know. I'm actually 38, and I've been writing fanfiction since I hit puberty. However, I only joined online fandom in 2001, which was also when I started writing fic in English. My native language is Swiss German, in case you're wondering, and I have the equivalent of an MA in Cultural Anthropology, Media Studies and German Literature. These days, I work an admin job in the renewable energy sector, and I spend my free time consuming media in the form of books, movies, TV shows, and podcasts. I find fandom fascinating, not just as a creative outlet in the form of writing, vidding, and gifing, but as a cultural phenomenon. I hope I'm not the only one who loves to hear people talk about their passions, and there's few things fans are more passionate about than their ships. The ship that we focus on in each episode is clearly stated in the title, so if you think that a ship will cause you distress or anger, please skip the episode. It's also quite likely that there'll be spoilers, so in the immortal words of River Song...
Spoilers.
The Legend of Korra is a sequel series to Avatar: The Last Airbender, which I've actually seen, and LJ only gave it a second chance after hearing of Korra Sami. I very much enjoyed hearing her perspective on loving a ship while having a somewhat ambivalent relationship with the show. We also talk about fans of different ships getting along. I do apologize for the varying audio quality. I tried my best and hope you can understand everything LJ has to say. But let's dive right in.
I took a trip on a great big ship to a land across the sea. To a land across the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea.
Okay, great, so you're all set.
I think so, yeah. I'm on my couch, like, chilling with my nice computer in front of me.
Yeah, same here, same here.
We're both ready to get into it, I guess.
Yes. Very yes. Relaxed. We are. I'm totally ready to hear what you have to tell me. And well, I'm really grateful that you're doing this.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah, filling in, you know?
Well, I guess the chain broke last time.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm really glad that I had you as like my rescue.
That's me, the white knight.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so hi, officially.
Hello.
And welcome to my podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So just to get started, why don't you give us a quick introduction?
Well, I call myself LJ, the initials for my real name. I use the nickname like LJ-Writes around a bunch of platforms. I have some notoriety on some of them, I guess, but mostly I'm just hanging around having fun. In real life, I'm a legal scholar. I've just been teaching a class today and writing grant proposals, so I guess I have the sweat to show for it. And a translator as well. I'm a mom to a 2.5-year-old little boy, and I'm from Korea.
Oh, so you've got quite a full program going on there.
Yes, so today was hell.
So thank you for making time for this then.
You're very welcome.
And before we go into the fandom that we're here to talk about today, why don't you tell us a bit about your fandom background?
Well, I started out with a fandom that we won't be discussing in depth today, I hope. Harry Potter. That was literally 20 years ago. So this actually marks my 20th year in fandom. I was college student, so I'm dating myself. I uploaded my first fanfic that I ever showed anyone outside of friend and family circles on the internet, on fanfictionnet. It was about Snape and Lily, and Snape kind of having a one-sided thing on Lily. So this was after Order, between Goblet of Fire and Order of the Phoenix, though. I guess I called that one. that's how I got started with fandom. And then I kind of drifted away from Harry Potter, but I still kept with fandom. So I had a bunch of others, like Final Fantasy VIII, not VII, VIII.
Is that an important distinction, asks the person who doesn't game?
Well, Final Fantasy VII is much bigger, I think, deservedly. Yeah, it's considered one of the classics of video gaming, and VIII is kind of the runt that came after it. But for me personally, just in my idiosyncratic personal history, I've never played VII, never got into it, and I really liked VIII. So I wrote fic for years, not about either the male or female protagonist, but rather about two side characters, Cypher Almacy, kind of a dickish asshole guy, who was the antagonist for most of the game, and his former instructor, Kistis Tripp. I hope I'm pronouncing the names right. They're only a year apart because she's a total prodigy and stuff like that. It was fun to write fic about them. I also wrote one or two, I think, Inuyasha fics. In 2011, 12-ish, I got big into Inuyasha. Avatar: The Last Airbender, which actually leads into our actual subject today. I wrote a really long fanfic for Avatar The Last Airbender, and I commented on a lot of fics as well and made a lot of friends that way. I mean, a lot of the friends that I made in the Avatar fandom are actually still my friends throughout fandoms, or sometimes across fandoms, even if we don't share main fandoms anymore. I drifted a little bit away from Avatar as well, And I guess my main fandom now is Star Wars, but I'm also into a bunch of other things as well, such as parts of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, MCU. Yeah. I'm a multi-fandom person, but upcoming episode 9 has kind of gotten me back into Star Wars.
I think that's something where a lot of us can relate to.
Oh, yeah. Like multi-fandom blogs on Tumblr, for instance, you know, a dime a dozen. Yeah, you blog about something that you're sure that nobody in your circle has ever heard of, and they're like, oh, I remember that. And then you have a nice chat.
Yeah, it's like, it's nice when fandoms collide, like, oh, yeah, I know you from, I don't know, Lord of the Rings, and now suddenly we're both in Star Wars. Nice.
Yeah, that's always nice.
So you were like multi-fandom and also multi-ship, or multi-ship, what sort of?
Yeah. I tend to have main ships, like generally canon ships. The ship I'll be talking about today, totally canon.
Totally canon, always nice.
I also kind of like, I have also my side ships or my like holy ships. So, you know, I'm all for fun, and ship and let ship, I guess. Although I am plenty critical of fandom trends and of fans, so
I mean, ship and let ship doesn't mean that you're not allowed to have your opinion.
It's absolutely. Like, it means that, you're not allowed to be like an asshole, a bully, but a critic.
Ruin other people's fun.
Like, I hate that. I hate it when, like, I have my no TP, which shall go unmentioned, but I really hate it when people cross-post into its tag and stuff like that, and that's so, so unnecessary. You can call out or talk about these toxic fandom trends without ruining people's fun, so.
Yeah, it's like what I like to call harshing people squee.
Yeah, that's it.
Which also dates me. The fandom lingo. But today we're not talking about anything controversial. We're talking about happily canon.
You might be surprised.
Okay.
I guess everything's controversial these days.
I forgot. I still live in this happy la la land sometimes.
Well, that's the best place to be.
Yeah, fandom's supposed to be fun. That's like that could be like the tagline.
Yeah, I guess sometimes people forget that. But then again, the works we enjoy themselves aren't always fun. So there is often a dark side.
That is true. So I've seen I've seen Avatar, the original series, but good haven't actually seen Legend of Korra.
Another good choice, because.
Actually,
I'll be talking about this, but I like Korrasami, but I don't like Legend of Korra a whole lot. I got back into it. I left after season one. I was sort of with the show, but I heard that Korrasami was endgame, and that got me curious enough to come back. But I am still very critical of much of the show. I think Avatar was clearly the better show, but Legend of Korra has some highlights, and for me, Korrasami is definitely the foremost of them.
Yeah, but so maybe kind of situate Legend of Korra in the wider Avatar universe.
It's literally the era of the grandchildren of the cast of Avatar: The Last Airbender. So you see Aang and Katara's grandchildren. You know, all three. Aang and Katara's children. All three of them. And then. One of those grandchildren, one of those children, their son Tenzin, Airbender's son, has three, I think, kids of his own, and you also see Zuko's son, I think, or grandson. Yeah, son. Yeah, mm-hmm. Zuko's daughter is the Fire Lord, and her son, I guess Iroh too, is some kind of general in the Republic City Army. Mm-hmm. Oh, and speaking of that, this place called Republic City, which is located in a future in a former Fire Nation. Fire Nation colony mm-hmm. on the Earth Kingdom is the backdrop, main backdrop for the show. So it's kind of a protectorate or colony, you might say, of all the other four nations mm-hmm. at the start. I think that kind of changes. I think it gains more independence, but it's not super clear what exactly the political arrangement is after season one. Except that they have a president. That's the kind of changes mm-hmm. that have happened. And there's also the fact that in Legend of Korra, technology has advanced a lot more. We mm-hmm. saw some of that starting in Avatar with like the character of Sokka and that mm-hmm. inventor guy from the Earth Kingdom and the Fire Nation's mass-producing airships. But in Legends of Korra, it's much more supercharged. So people are living in a technological age with photography, radios, and cars, or are called Satomobiles.
Okay.
Yeah, Sato Satomobiles are actually named after Asami's dad, I think, who mm-hmm. you know invented and mass produced those machines. And so, it's a like an early 20th century thereabout, I think. And and commensurate with that, spirituality has seen a decline. Part of the show, I think, explains or grapples with the idea of what the Avatar, who is kind of an embodiment of God or godliness, I guess, mm-hmm. What kind of relevance she has in this new age. It has a really interesting premise, I think.
But there's still bending going on.
Yeah, it's a major point across all seasons. I haven't heard of bending particularly declining, but you definitely see it like less prestigious, you might say. You remember lightning bending from the original show? Azula lightning bending and Zuko channeling lightning, things like that. Well, lightning bending in season one of Korra is shown to be actually generating electricity. It's grunt work. And bending is also a popular sport in Republic City. Mm-hmm. So again, you see these kind of rocky like situations, you know, these backstreet, you know, slightly poorer kids coming into it, trying to make a name and get out of their gritty street life, things like that. That's basically Mako and Bolin's beginning story, and Korra joins them in it. And so bending still exists, but it also has taken kind of a I don't know if you can call it backseat, but there's definitely less prestige or spirituality attached to it.
And so Korra and Asami, who are they?
Korra is the new Avatar. I guess I should have started with that, right? I assumed everyone knew. She is the reincarnation of Avatar Aang, who tragically died fairly early, I would say like 40s, from being a popsicle for a century. That caught up to him eventually. Korra inherited the Avatar mantle. She's the new Avatar. You know how the cycle goes, like air, water, and then, earth, fire, and then back to air. And so after air, the new Avatar is born from the water tribe, the southern water tribe to be exact, which is very relevant in the second season. She's the Avatar. And as for Asami, she's, like I said, she's the heiress to basically the Ford of this world, automobile magnate's daughter, who is herself a really cool racer and a mechanic and gorgeous as hell to boot. And so you might say that it's sort of a match made in heaven, although it may take a while to get there and go through a lot of hardship first.
Yeah, I mean, how many seasons?
There are 4 seasons total.
4 seasons, okay.
Yeah, I like to pretend there were only 3, but yeah. Season 1 was the worst.
Yeah, you said that you actually gave up after season 1.
Yeah, I was very angry after season 1. Or, I don't know, some people, I guess a lot of people would disagree, but, you know, the way they set it up was that there was this guy called Amon, who is kind of your run-of-the-mill straw communist, who says, like, bending gives people unequal privileges and non-benders are discriminated against. And there's actually a lot of tantalizing hints saying that he might be saying that he's right, that, you know, Asami, for instance, despite all her riches and privilege, her mother was murdered by a firebender, like gangster, evidently, and she never gets justice. The murderer is evidently never caught. And so that kind of becomes the catalyst for Asami's father, the elder Sato, to seek revenge on benders or help Amon get rid of benders.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, there's definitely some hints that non-benders are discriminated against. And then it comes out that Amon isn't actually a non-bender who was horribly scarred by a firebender, as he had claimed. He's actually a bender himself. He's a waterbender. And, you know, his power to remove people's bending is actually a form of blood bending, you know, from the original Avatar. Yeah, and then it kind of implies that everything Amon was talking about was a scam or something.
Yeah.
And he's made out to be unequivocally the bad guy and con artist. So it's kind of a mess. And then, you know,
so by invalidating him, you also invalidate his reasoning.
Maybe a con man who used that kind of a real a marginalization could exist, but the show also didn't have enough world building to show, you know, whether this guy was actually full of shit or using a real, actual, you know, very serious issue. So yeah, it was messy. And then the people who had their bending talk taken away by Amon during season 1 all had it magically returned, starting with Korra, by the power of the avatars and the Deus Ex Machina. So I was not a fan of that. I was pretty frustrated.
So you gave up after that, but then
I rage quit.
Yeah, but you already liked Korra and Asami enough that hearing that they got together made you reconsider.
Yeah, I thought the characters were okay. I mean, they were all kind of underwritten, in my opinion. And I think Asami's story of losing her mother and then eventually her father to the political split between them was underexplored as well. And Mako and Bolin are just underexplored throughout. But the characters themselves are very appealing and charming. To be honest, you know, the fact that 2 women in a popular show got together more or less officially, you know, that was the part that really drew my attention. I did like them enough, I guess, even if I didn't think they were like the most interesting characters ever. And that's mostly a flaw of the writing, of course.
Yeah. So do they, what kind of ship are they? Are they like, is it a friendship that turns to love, or are they, start they out more in like antagonistic roles, or?
I think both.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they are definitely friends to lovers, but originally, funny story, they actually start out as 2 points of a lover's triangle involving Mako, the handsome, pretty boy.
Seriously?
Yeah. I guess that's another part that grabbed me, the idea that 2 girls who both used to say date the same guy at different times, they're all good friends, they're all part of a friend like circle that they got together. I guess that was a little bit titillating, the sense. So there was a little bit of tension between them at first, due to Korra having a crush on Asami's boyfriend. Mm-hmm. There is that. But, you know, they very quickly found like a footing for their friendship and became good friends without that, you know, I hate you because you have a crush on my man, or because you have my man, that kind of crap. So I guess that was one thing I found very interesting and charming about them. So, and at one point, you know, even though Mako is dating Asami, he still has feelings for Korra. Mm-hmm. And Korra in season one actually tells him to stay with Asami because, you know, she and Asami and her father are now enemies, basically, because her father is supporting Amon, and Asami has cast her lot with her bender friends, despite being a non-bender herself. And so she's going through a hard time. So Korra tells Mako to stay in the relationship with Asami because she's going through a hard time and she needs the support, and possibly will be able to bear like the stress of a breakup on top of everything else. So maybe that can be seen as a really early sign of where they would end up eventually. Yeah. But mostly I found that kind of level of consideration, friendship, very appealing.
Yeah, and it's so refreshing.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah, so often, like the love triangle is like the most boring part of any show.
Oh, really? I mean, Korra season one itself could have done it better, but but at least they had that saving grace that Asami and Korra are not reduced to like catfighting.
Yeah, don't lay your fingers on my man.
Yeah. Oh, I hate that.
Yeah. So, so that was season one, and then you came back. You heard that they got together, and you came back. So, in the following seasons, did the show improve, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think anything could be worse than season one.
Okay.
Season two, in some ways, like underperformed season one in the sense that they got a different company to do the art for a while, which worked out terribly. So season two is visually the least impressive of the seasons. And it is a very visually impressive show for the most part. Season two also had the part that showed the origin of the avatars with Avatar 1. With extremely like gorgeous animation styles, so it kind of made up for some of the visually lacking episodes that way. The story, while not stellar, I thought was an improvement over season one. Even though it had some horrible parts as well, such as basically laughing at playing a woman's intimate partner abuse of a man for comic value, which I thought was horrible.
Yeah.
That it's not either Korra or Asami, by the way.
Yeah.
Another character named Eska, who dated Bolin and treated him horribly.
Mm-hmm. But it's funny because he's a guy.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it's the 21st century. Let's not do this anymore.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, and Korra and Mako were dating in season two. This was the absolute high point of Makora shippers' hopes, Mako and Korra shippers. And then they broke up, and Korra was romantically unattached for season three and most of season four, before she got with Asami near the end of season four. Season two and the way it was treated and the way fans reacted to it, I guess, is the source of much of the Makora fans' bitterness, I think. I don't want to like paint them as the villains here. I think plenty of Korrasami shippers kind of bash on Mako to make their own ship look better, which I think is also awful.
Yeah, and I guess in season two they probably thought that theirs was the end game ship, and then
yeah, it certainly looked that way.
Yeah,
if I had been just watching without knowing the ending, that is, if I didn't come back after knowing the ending, I probably would have rage quit again, even if I hadn't after season one, because I did not like Makora. It doesn't mean I hate Mako.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think he had a good point. I was actually on his side more than Korra when they broke up, finally.
Mm-hmm.
But the ship itself didn't really work for me as endgame.
So then she was unattached, but were there already seeds of the relationship between her and Asami changing?
Some would say yes, others say no. I think it can be read both ways. But, like, if you're looking for a pattern, you can find it anywhere. Mm-hmm. Anywhere, right? There are Makora fans still talking about how, you know, Brian Konietzko and Michael DiMartino, the creators of the show, were still talking about Makora as endgame at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So that they argue that Korosami was not really planned, but rather that it was kind of put together, rushed together for the representation value and things like that. On the other hand, there are people, I don't think anyone goes so far as to argue it was planned all along,
okay, because
that would seem to be giving that show too much credit. Some say that it worked out even better because it wasn't planned.
Okay.
It looks a lot like the way that queer people get together in real life,
mm-hmm,
you know, starting as deep friendship and then slowly realizing their friendship, their romantic feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it works for some people, doesn't for others.
So they then, it was only in season four that they became clearly romantic.
Yeah. Before that, it could be read as a very deep friendship. Again,
mm-hmm,
you read what you want into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it became more plausible as they kind of gained their individual stories.
Mm-hmm.
When the writers finally got a clue what to do with the characters, mm-hmm, with these characters at any rate. I don't think Mako and Bolin ever got a real chance there. Asami's father was in jail after the events of season one for siding with Amon and,
mm-hmm,
basically becoming a terrorist with him. She kind of painfully finds her way to reconciliation with her father, while Korra has a lot of trauma to recover from, especially in season four, after being tortured into the Avatar state,
mm,
at the end of season three in a very horrific sequence. They both have their arcs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that made them individually kind of stand out and become more real to the viewer,
yeah,
in a way. And that made a romance between them work out all the better.
Mm-hmm. So, do you have like a particular kind of moment, like when they got together, or what's your favorite bit?
Well, one that stands out in memory, I mean, I like those early hints, if you want to,
mm-hmm,
read it that way, with, you know, Korra telling Mako, the boy she had feelings for at the time, to stay with his girlfriend, for Tommy's sake. You know, that could be read as an early hint, and I like those things. One moment that stands out in memory is, I think this was past mid-season four, when they were increasingly growing close, I could see the hints. Maybe it helped that I knew the,
yeah,
end game. But at one point, Korra actually blushes,
mm-hmm,
at a compliment from Asami. And that, to me, was the point where they clearly crossed the threshold,
mm-hmm,
from being very good friends to having a flirtatious and romantic relationship.
Yeah. Like, there's no heterosexual explanation for this.
Yes, absolutely. How? That blush was such a nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they never have a kiss on the show.
Okay.
Because, yeah, you know, rating and executive meddling, things mm-hmm. like that. The most they get at the end is when they kind of reverently, you know, face each other, clasping hands, mm-hmm. Which the creators actually had to give their word of God was them getting together romantically. And this is made clearer in the follow-up comic series, oh, okay. Turf Wars, mm-hmm. Where Korra calls Azami her girlfriend mm-hmm. and things like that. But yeah, within their limits, they did show them increasingly becoming a couple. Mm-hmm. And those are some of my favorite moments.
Yeah, I think I've seen that last shot of them. Like,
yeah, it gets passed around a lot, right? And like gift sets and things like that.
Yeah, I don't know, a network thing that they couldn't like be more explicit, a kiss or something.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, this was Nickelodeon, so I guess
everyone knows that gay is always not, you know, it's not for kids. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, because there are no gay kids.
No. Oh well, but at least they did make it like pretty clear. So.
Yeah, I did appreciate the word of God, and I think, you know, Korra, that blushy moment, mm-hmm. I think was pretty unmistakable. They were trying to make it as clear as they could within the limits they had. Yeah.
And is it a popular fandom?
In Legend of Korra, absolutely. Mm-hmm. They're the canon pairing and just an appealing pairing in many ways, because in no small part, I think, because they were just about two of the only characters who had any actual death. Mm-hmm. Others might disagree with me on that. But there are about 8,000, a little over 8,000 fics, Legend of Korra fics mm-hmm. on AO3. And like half of them are Korra-Zami fics. Mm-hmm. And the next most popular pairing, Makora, comes to like less than 1,000.
Okay, so it's definitely,
yeah, there's no content.
Yeah.
It's a big ship, with really passionate fans, mm-hmm. and a lot of gorgeous fan art.
Yeah,
I love seeing Korra-Zami fan art on my dash.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you already mentioned that that the second favorite ship is that Makora one, but is it,
yeah, I guess,
yeah, so. Is there like bad blood between the two ships, or I don't know, it's different in fandom, yeah. You know,
yeah, fandom will fandom. Bad blood, I guess. Like I said, I don't think I don't think the vast majority of fans, you know, are involved in any kind of real beef. Mm-hmm. But there has been bad behavior on both sides, I think.
Yeah.
And I by no means exempt Korra-Zami shippers mm-hmm. from this. There is no need to, like, rag yeah. on Mako to make Korra or Azami look better. Mm-hmm. They love each other. They're friends. So, yeah. And I don't think either Mako or Korra was perfect mm-hmm. in their relationship back when they were dating or thereafter. They both made mistakes. But, you know, due to bashing on one part and bitterness on the other, I think some fans are kind of in a discourse war over this in some corners of the internet.
So the fandom is still active these days? Because, I mean, the show's been over quite a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's not as active as it used to be, but you still see fan art mm-hmm. and fanfic. So I would say it's about what you'd expect from a pretty popular show that has been off air for a while.
Is that what was it? Turf War still going?
Turf War. Yeah, I think all three or four books might be out by now, and here's where I reveal myself to be a bad fan. I haven't seen Turf Wars. I just know some parts of it from like fandom osmosis, yes. like I said, I'm not a huge fan of Legend of Korra itself. Mm-hmm. I just like Korazami, and so I'm not super caught up on everything. But yeah, I think it's all finished or close mm-hmm. to being so.
And you yourself, you write, right?
Yeah, well, I guess my nickname is sometimes more of an aspiration than reality, but I try to. Yeah. I love to write.
And are you like? Are there like tropes or something that influence you?
Tropes from like Korazami tropes?
Yeah. What sort of trope or genre is like popular in Korazami fans?
Let's see. Like following the show itself, like action adventure, you know, supernatural action, mm-hmm. I think are definitely big things. Hurt comfort, because mm-hmm. Korra goes through some significant trauma, and Asami kind of helping her through that, and the two of them realizing their feelings that way. That seems to be another kind of popular thread. Friends to lovers, obviously, because for me the main characters of Korra are really friends foremost, mm-hmm. And romantic feelings are distinctly secondary to that, although it's awesome when it happens. Mm-hmm. Some fun, you know, adventure AUs or AUs that otherwise put the characters together where they were separated during the show, for instance. Yeah. Those seem to be some common themes, although I'm by no means like the most knowledgeable person.
But you're still, like, your heart still beats for Korazami.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'll always love Korazami. I mean, I'm a bisexual Asian woman mm-hmm. myself, and, you know, you don't often see that represented in, like, big media.
That is true.
So they have a really special place in my heart, and I, like I said, I've always loved Friends mm-hmm. to Lovers, and they are that to a T with a queer twist in this mm-hmm. case. Two girlfriends who become girlfriends. That's nice.
Yeah. There's still not a lot of canon lesbian pairings. That's
yeah, I think you profiled one of them in a prior show, Bumblebee.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, there's actually, I guess this speaks to the like the rarity that you spoke mm-hmm. of. That one of the big like posts on Korazami is actually a parallel with like the Bumblebee ship, the two of them touching for mm-hmm. it. So when I saw that, I thought of that episode.
Yeah, there's really. I mean, it's slowly getting better, but yeah.
Yeah, and even in fandom, you know, Femslash tends to be much smaller mm-hmm. than, in a way, less fervent than Dude Slash. Yeah. So I guess there's a bit of an enthusiasm gap there as well.
Yeah, one could have like a whole show devoted to the hows and whys and what might be behind that phenomenon.
Yeah, that would be a good show, actually, like a more meta level.
I'm pretty sure like podcasts like Fansplaining and stuff have done.
Mm-hmm. I really liked their race episode.
Yeah, they've covered some really interesting ground.
Yeah, like, they've also talked about like aces, asexuals mm-hmm. and fandom.
Which, yay, representation.
Yes.
Yeah, it goes a bit beyond the scope of this particular podcast, because I'm, you know, why should I try to repeat what they already do so very well?
Well, we get to talk about it in bits and pieces mm-hmm. through the really fascinating lens into ships.
I guess. It always comes up, because obviously there's lots of overlap and lots of fans are interested in, you know, not just their ship, but also like fandom as a like broader.
Yeah, it's something that affects all of us. It's a reflection of real life, too, in many mm-hmm. cases.
Or it should be. And have you written Kurosami fic?
Oh, I wish I had. I mean, I don't I don't have the time I used to mm-hmm. to like just sit down and write or even to read a lot of fan fiction. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there is a fanfic idea that I've been kicking around for a while. Yeah. Which I'd like to still like to write someday. Mm-hmm. It's basically about Asami becoming a vigilante to, you know, hunt down Bender mm-hmm. gangs, you know, the kind that killed her mother, and also trying to find her mother's killer. So like a very like a Bruce Wayne in Republic oh. City kind of way, you know, a super rich bachelor or bachelorette in this case, you know, vigilante on the streets. And then, of course, Cora tries to track mm-hmm. her down because the other police haven't really had a success. And sparks fly as they kind of repeatedly clash. So I think that's one that fantasy is my way of kind of reconciling how some of, I think, Asami's really interesting plot mm-hmm. points were dropped in season one and never brought up again, other than her relationship to her father, which was nice.
Oh, yeah, so that would be a pretty interesting story.
Yeah, I love, like, honorable enemies mm-hmm. Who are attracted to each other.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we only see like Cora and Asami as mm-hmm. friends, other than like the brief love triangle feels. So it'll also be interesting to see them on opposite sides, mm-hmm. Which is actually something that a premise of really excellent Kurosami fic.
That would bring us smoothly into the rec part.
So probably there are other people who know a lot more fics mm-hmm. than I do, but some of the ones that stood out to me was one was called Parts to Play by Darling Gypsum. It's about Asami being an equalist spy, basically from book mm-hmm. one. So instead of being like a purely like on the good guy's side, she is in fact, you know, in cahoots with her father and kind of ensnaring the Avatar for the Equalists, at least at first. And then, you know, she has a change of heart and things like that.
It's a bit of a different dynamic.
Yeah. And I think it does more justice to Asami's more conflicted mm-hmm. background than season one did, than book one did. So that's another thing I like about it. Yet another thing I like about it is that Cora and Asami are pretty much flirting outrageously in a way, even while Asami was still dating Mako. I mean, nothing that would be considered mm-hmm. cheating, but, you know... like Asami starts out literally giving Cora a massage in chapter one, saying like, "Oh, you have the same spots. You react to the same spots as Mako does." It's pretty suggestive, without being inappropriate. Given Asami dating someone else, or Asami telling Cora, "I know how to show a girl a good time," huh? Things like that. So it's a really fun fic to read, in addition to, like, I think, giving more depth to Asami's character.
Yes, and do you have another fic that you think people absolutely have to read?
Well, since I mentioned a bad blood between Kurosami and Makoro mm-hmm. shippers, and since Parts to Play is a long fic, I think another one that people might like as kind of a counterpoint mm-hmm. to that is a really mm-hmm. short fic called The Avatar Doesn't Come With an Instruction Manual. And it's about Asami talking to Mako mm-hmm. Before she gets with Cora. And, respectfully acknowledging the relationship that they share, and in the case of romantic relationships, used to share with each other, and showing Mako being like a really A-plus friend and very amicable ex-boyfriend, mm-hmm. supporting his friends absolutely in their new relationship. And so I think that's a nice mm-hmm. counterpoint to some of the negativity and bashing mm-hmm. that's going on in the fandom.
And those are canon-based.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, Hearts to Play is, what do they call it, canon diversions? The Avatar doesn't come with an instruction manual still. That title still makes yes. me chuckle. This one's fully compliant and it's fairly short, mm-hmm. too.
And are there any AUs that you want to rec?
One thing that caught my eye was one called She's a Pirate by Avatar Aang 7. It's one where Korra is a pirate, leader of a pirate mm-hmm. crew, in fact. And she takes the noblewoman Asami prisoner. I mean, she discovers her, Asami on a ship that she had taken. And things take off from there. And it's such a fun AU. And yeah, Korra is a pirate, Asami is a mm-hmm. noblewoman. Very fitting as well.
It's always nice to I love AUs like when they manage to fit the characters so that they're still recognizable into a different setting.
Yeah, using completely different mm-hmm. genres and different tropes, and still the the characters and their relationships come through. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Any other fic or maybe art that you want to rec?
Oh, this one's also AU, but it's art. Mm-hmm. So there's this series of panels or paintings, I guess, depicting Korra and Asami in a Little Mermaid situation, where Asami is the mermaid and Korra is the princess that she saves from mm-hmm. drowning. And they are just so cute. And it takes off pretty directly from Disney's mm-hmm. Little Mermaid too, so you know that it's going to be a happy ending.
Yeah, unlike the original Hans Christian Andersen.
Oh yeah, we can't have that.
That would be tragic.
Yeah, no more burying your gaze.
No, not allowed. Is there GIFs or vids that people do?
I haven't seen. I don't know if this, I don't think I see a lot of like animation mm-hmm. gift sets, like period, very much. I mean, there are some people who do them, like Avatar symbolism on mm-hmm. Tumblr, but I don't tend to see them a whole lot compared to live action shows. I'm not sure what that's about, but I did see some, like there's this really hilarious kind of edit, I mm-hmm. guess, where they put like new dialogue into a scene with Korra and Asami. I actually don't remember this from the show. It's been a while since I saw it, but Korra's all tied up and she's like, when I said I was into bondage, this is not what I meant. Pretty sure that wasn't in the original show. And, Asami is like, I can feel you staring at my ass. Really funny gift set with funny lines. And there's also a gift set where through editing magic make Korra and Asami aww. Kiss. Even though they have no kissing scenes in the actual show. So what should have been, they made into a reality.
Fandom is so talented.
Yeah, transformative fandom at its best, huh?
Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about this ship or fan works that you want people mm-hmm. to see?
Well, like I said, I'm not like super mm-hmm. knowledgeable about all this, so which I kind of regret. I think one thing that Kurosami got me into was like more femslash mm-hmm. in general, and I think people are getting more into it. Like there was a there's a Marvel like femslash exchange that's going on. But then again, Marvel is one of those fandoms that are big enough and actually have enough female characters to support that kind of thing.
Yeah, these days, yes.
But, yeah. So, like I said, I like the pairing, but not the show so much. But it's inspired me to kind of be more active in femslash, in the fandoms that I'm in canons that I actually like. And so I think that is another thing that Kurosami has given me.
Yeah. And who will I be talking to next?
Oh, I think you're going to love her. She uses the name Diverse High Fantasy on Tumblr, blogging about representation in media and fandom issues, fandom racism.
Nice. Juicy.
And she's actually a real life journalist as well, Holly Quinn. She is going to be talking about another one of my favorite pairings. I think maybe my favorite pairing ever, like Finbay, from the new Star Wars movies. And, I really look forward to her insights and to her squeeing about our mutual
opinion. Yeah, so that's going to be definitely very interesting and relevant to my personal interests as well, which is always nice. I mean, it's not a requirement to be on this podcast, but it means I don't feel quite as stupid. not like today when I'm like, and who are these people?
Well, actually, I think that works out because, you know, it's not an as-you-know situation, you know? There's actual explanation going on. But it would be fun to, like, to see the host and the guest both knowing what they're talking about and both, like,
and yet, obviously, with Finray, it's very, like, timely with the new trailer out and everything.
Yeah, with episode 9 coming on and the old fandom discourses, I guess, starting up again.
Yeah. Let's just leave it at that.
Yep. I think Holly can pick this up from there.
We definitely find time. And if people want to find you online, where can they do so?
Well, why would you want to? Like, but if you insist on it, I use the same nick basically everywhere I'm
active, so
I'm LJ-Wright. I actually paid money to make that happen on Dreamwith. I changed my URL there, so consistency important. I use that nick on Tumblr and Dreamwith and Pillowport, actually this is how we met, right? The Mastodon instance fandom.in ink, like as in writing ink, not incorporated company ink. I have the same handle on all of those platforms, so if you want to say hi.
Yes, that is in fact how we met. Because I finally found a play, because I never did fandom Twitter, and at Mastodon I finally found a comfortable space.
It has like the feel of, it's very chill. It has kind of old, like a fandom BBS feel, while having a microblogging format. It works very well, I think, for making connections.
And I don't feel so ancient there.
We're a little bit older there, right?
Yeah. So thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you.
I had fun.
Me too.
I hope you did too.
Doubly, I think. I got to do most of the talking, so.
Yeah, well, that's how it's supposed to be.
True.
I mean, I'm not supposed to, like, monologue.
I mean, I monologue like a villain today, so.
Like I said, that's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, you know, and I remembered things that I didn't even know I remembered, and it brought up a lot of good memories.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
I took a trip on a great big ship to a land across the sea, to a land across the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea.
This wraps up the 13th episode. I hope you've enjoyed hearing about Korra and the Sami's relationship as much as I have, and can't wait to check out some of LJ's recs. As always, these can be found in the show notes on shippingcast.fandomish.net. That's fandomish.net. If you're in any way active on Tumblr or other fanish circles, I'm sure you've seen the first teaser for the new Star Wars. I'm personally very excited, especially for more of my other favorite Star Wars trio, Rey, Finn and Poe, which makes the next episode decidedly relevant to my interests. I'll be talking with Diverse High Fantasy about the pairing of Rey and Finn. The episode will be released on May 17, earlier for Patreon supporters. And talking Patreon, I'm planning my first special episode. When recording the originally planned episode 13, Maya Zulf gave me a fun introduction to Steam-Powered Giraffe, who are a band of steam-powered robots, if I understand the premise of this extraordinary band correctly. Here's a short clip of one of their songs to whet your appetite.
Well, come with me, I'll show you how to be a metal man. When the gears are turning and the files are burning, when the world takes around, your voice is talking all the time. And you live for sleeping, you've never slept, because you cannot sleep.
Sounds great, doesn't it? I'll release the episode sometime in May, so don't hesitate and become a patron on patreon.com/shippingcast. If you want to support the podcast in other ways, there's also the option to send me a one-time donation on ko-fi.com/shirazade or via PayPal to webmistress@shirazade.net. All these options are also described on shippingcast.fandomish.net/support. And you can help me totally for free by leaving reviews or simply spreading the word to other fans. You can follow and get in touch on Tumblr as ShippingCast, on Twitter as Shipping_Cast, and you can email the podcast on theshippingcast@fandomish.net. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you think of the podcast and the ships we've been covering. You can find the podcast on all major podcasting platforms. A full list can be found on shippingcast.fandomish.net/subscribe. I'm Shirazade, spelled Shirasade, and you can find me as such on Tumblr, AO3, YouTube, Pillowfort, Dreamwit, and on shirazade.net. I've also joined Mastodon as shirazade@fandom.inc with a K. The podcast artwork was created by the wonderful Little Zion. The music is Sailor Song by the Peerless Quartet. Thanks so much for listening, and remember, you are the captain of your ship.
Sometimes on Tumblr, I do feel the years.
Yeah, like there was that post going around about, you know, being over 20 on Tumblr with, you know, the Will Smith flower headdress and standing in a sea of kids. Yeah.
The funniest thing the funniest one of those that I've ever seen was from someone who did that when they were 16 and they turned 20 last year.
Oh my god.
So everyone was kind of like pointing and being like, what are you still doing on Tumblr?
Well, they grew up a little.